even the men from Laxey walking up to Agnesia.
Yes. Right, I'm sure she's going now. That's fine. Well, how long have you been in this place, Mr. Quayle?
In these premises, my grandfather moved here in November 1877. He moved from a site somewhere in Clinch's brewery set up now.
Yes.
Called it the Douglas Bridge Stone Yard.
Uh-huh. And he was a... Where did he serve his time as a mason?
In Douglas. Where it was a man named Comish. He was the boss.
Was he?
And
yes.
Eventually, my grandfather took over his business. And he worked for my grandfather for a year or two, I believe.
Did he? Yes.
I understand he was a relative of some kind. Just what their relationship was, I don't know.
And then he moved here?
And yes.
Was your father in the same trade?
Oh, yes. He took over when my grandfather died. Well, he actually was running it for some years before, because my grandfather had a couple of strokes, pretty bad strokes.
Did
before
he
got the third one, of course, which
yes.
finished them in those days.
Yeah. And then you in turn took over from
your
father?
Well, yes, when my father died, in 1953, I took it over.
Yes. And you've always been in this sort of trade, have you?
Oh, yes. Apart from that 5.5 to 5.75 years of most of us.
Ah, yes, in the war, yes. Yes, indeed. Well, where did you get all your stone that you use here?
Well, in my time, of course, building stone came mainly from Cumberland, from St. Bees, and also quite a bit from Yorkshire, and then there are bits from Portland.
Mm-hmm.
But the monumental stone, of course, was Yorkshire and red sandstone from St. Bees again. But marble had started to take over from then, and it was coming in ready-made, most of it, yes.
Ready-dressed?
Yes, the headstones made. Before the First World War, they had made marble headstones and things here, but...
Yes.
Once the Italians got down to the business, you just couldn't compete with it.
No.
Cost. And,
no.
And then granite, of course, always came from Aberdeen.
Did it?
Yes. And it later, was largely replaced by granite from Norway and Sweden, from Sweden mainly.
Was it?
Which was worked in Germany and sent here, came here ready worked again. Because Hitler was subsidising exports in those days, so again the Aberdeen people having great difficulty in competing again.
Yes, yeah. Well, in your grandfather's day then, where would they be getting their stone from these places?
Oh yes, from St. Bees, a lot of it, because in those days they were doing a lot of building work, far more building work than monumental work,
uh-huh.
I think. They did the red sandstone work for Rosemount Church and St. Matthew's Church.
Yes.
And the two big alterations to St. George's Church.
Uh-huh.
The railway offices, the Rolls office.
And that's all St. Bees sandstone?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Well, then be shipped over by...
Well, the schooners.
The schooners?
Over those days, yeah.
Were they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In my grandfather's early days, anyway, I think it had started to come round by Liverpool towards the end of his life.
Mm-hmm.
The dockers at Whitehaven started imposing extra charges for this and the other, and eventually it was no more expensive to take it off to Liverpool by rail and ship it across from there.
Really?
Yeah. And then of course the thing happened in Liverpool too. Right. It up and up and up.
Yes, yes. It must have always been a problem, I suppose. To
transport. Transport. Of materials.
Yeah. Well, was there any local stone used at all?
Well, yeah, a certain amount of limestone from Scarlet was used round about. Noble's Hospital there, it's on that, of course,
yes.
A lot of it. And St. Thomas's Church vestries. I remember those being done when I was a small boy. I wasn't a trade, of course. I think they're scarlet limestone, whereas the St. Thomas's Church itself is all that limestone from Port St. Mary off the point.
Yeah. And what about the slate work? That would be local, wouldn't it?
Well, no, no, the slate came in from North Wales and from Cumberland and Westmoreland.
Did it?
For monumental work.
Yes,
yes. Building work. No, the local slate was very little use for anything, but the only thing it was ever used for as slate was roofs up around Foxdale. You see, the slates are about as thick as
that's right.
two or three of the Welshers.
Slates and dry stone walls, they said, was about the only use
for it.
And road work.
And
I see. So it all had to be imported.
So most of it, as I say, it was a bit of Novus Hospital and things. And of course, that, you've got the Castletown Police Station, is scarlet limestone again, of course, and various buildings in Castletown and district. But it's scarlet, didn't, you know, the limestone wasn't used to any great extent around Douglas.
Wasn't it? No.
Well, you notice all the churches, they're red sandstone coins and windows, so heads and so on. I mean, we even did the Sunday schools for St George's in the 30s there, they're red sandstone.
Right. And these were for lintels and windows?
Windows, yes.
That sort of thing, decorative work.
Yes, and silver. And we did a Park Road school. My grandfather had done the original stonework in that, and of course there was an extension put on in the 30s, and so we windowsills and heads there again.
Yes.
I'm not sure about coins now, but I don't think there were coins, it was windows and heads.
Just basically windows and heads. And when the stone actually got here, what did you have to do to it to get it ready for the site, did you?
Well, to dress it down.
Yeah.
It just to come. Usually it was one sawn face in my time, and from there you could make sure that was perfectly true, and then you could square off that, of course, and gauge from it to get the same.
And how did you cut it?
Well, with hammers and chisels, and then dress it with mallets.
I was noticing these saws on the wall. What are they for?
Well, they were for softer stone, bath stone and cairn stone.
Were they?
Cairn stone particularly, but you can work both of them with wood tools.
Yes.
Soft. The bath stone hardens up quite a lot, but it begins to break up on the surface once it hardens. It's not been a real success in the Isle of Man.
No.
The Tyndall Court in Bucks Road there,
yes.
the facing for that bath stone is a great pity because it's a lovely building.
Yes, it is.
And the new church at Kirkbraddon, that has them too, and they have the same difficulty out there. If you notice up in the belfry, you'll see the stones have split.
I see.
And yet the same stone lasts quite well down its natural source.
Could be the salt atmosphere here.
Could be that or something, or maybe smoke or something like that.
I've noticed a big lintel out in the yard there. You were telling me a bit of a story about that.
That's quite a story. That's a Spanish head lintel. Spanish head used to quarry those, of course. And it's when they were demolishing Big Well Street down here, which now Lord Street, the old houses there, Knox was passing, Archibald Knox was passing them one day, and he saw this huge lintel stretching over the front door and the window of the front room of the house. It spanned a lot. And he saw the man in charge of the job. He said, what are you going to do with that? He said, smash it up, get the card away. He said, can you leave it until I've seen the people at the town hall? He said, I've got a job, which that would do. He said, I've got a use for it, you can save it. Oh, it's all right, Mr. Knox, you know, down South Douglas, anything that Knox has said, they would all agree. And the so he went up to the town hall and he got permission, but they couldn't store it. He'd had to find a store. He said, well, I'll have no trouble with that. I'll go up to Tartan Quail and get it in the store yard. He put it up there for me. So that's what happened. And we never found out what he had in mind for it, but he died 2 or 3 years later, of course, and it was never used. And it lay in there ever since. My father always said that if ever there was a move to erect a memorial to Knox, he would offer this stone to them.
Yes.
And until such time as a memorial was erected or they said, damn, if we weren't going to put one up, it could stay here and be used for that purpose.
Yeah.
And of course, heritage years come round, and talking to Peter Kelly one day in here, right? And he said, oh, Onken's got a big stone up there, came off the base of the War Memorial as a heritage year symbol, and she said, oh, others have done different things. And he said, I don't think Braddon done anything. I said, well, there's his site, because Knox was born at Cronkbourne, and that's his, if they're interested. And he approached the clerk, the commissioners, and the commissioners were in agreement to use it. And that's where it's going. We'll be moving out of here in a couple of days' time, I hope.
Yes, up to Braddon.
Yes.
A very fitting
up to Cronkbourne.
Tribute, really, to Archie, isn't it?
Yes, well, it is the birthplace.
Quite.
And it serves as a heritage year symbol as well.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Yeah. Do you find, you'll find a lot of difference in present day methods, etc., than there were when you were.
Oh, yes. Well, even when I started trade, because we were still hand dressing stone, and all those coins and windows and arch stones and sills over in St. George's there, it's all hand dressed here.
Yeah. What exactly does dressed mean in that sense?
Well, taking it down to a finished surface, preparing stone to a finished, to the required size, and then to the finished surface.
Yes.
That, if you notice, they're finished parallel lines, grooves along the face with a claw tool. Whereas on most of the older buildings, you finish, you can see the big tool marks. Like
that's right.
A very wide chisel, a tool.
But it was all done by hand.
Oh, right? That. And of course, it meant that every week, there'd be one mason would be and have a day in the smithy next, which is next door, where you saw the forge there, and the anvil, and the tools had to be heated up in the high in the fire to a certain temperature, and then hammered down to a fairly thin edge again.
To be tempered.
And tempered then. Once you got them. Tempered them then.
And did one man do the tools for all of
them? No, every man did his own.
He did his own tools in the smithy.
Yeah. That was one thing I was not good at.
Really?
But I got very peculiar eyes, and I couldn't see the temper running on the tools at times. You could see the straw come down and then the blue.
Yeah.
But if my eyes were giving me trouble, I couldn't see the colour running on them. Dick Lawton used to do them for me.
Yes. And how many masons were there employed here?
At that time, 6.
Six masons?
Mm. Yeah. Well, five and an improver, as he was known.
Yes.
Became a very good mason.
So times have changed quite a lot.
Oh yes, and of course we had a couple of labourers going and they used to rub the stone, so that they wanted a smooth finish, they would rub them down to that.
And that all had to be done by hand?
Oh yes, it was done with carver on them blocks.
Was it?
Yes, and then different grits, they varied in the coarseness or fineness. Put a finer one on it.
Which was the most difficult stone to work with?
Well, if you're dressing it, granite.
Was it?
Probably because we weren't used to it. Men at Castledown in the old days were probably much better. Well, they were, because they dressed the granite for the War Memorial. They were used to it. Brought down from the Stony Mountain at Foxdale.
Well, is it possible to get a sort of a shine on the granite, like a
gloss? Granite, yes. It takes a very high polish.
How is that achieved?
Well, just grinding it down to a very, very fine surface and then polishing it with the polishing agents. There are pieces down there. You see a very high polish on them. And of course in India they started to get a very high polish on them.
Yes.
Germany did before
the
war.
Yeah. And it's all done by hand?
Oh no, that was done by machine.
Was it?
No doubt, way back it was
done
by hand.
Yes.
They always had polishing machinery in my time. You should see the adverts for them in the trade tool catalogues.
Yes. Let's just see what we've got. Oh dear. That's better. I noticed out in the yard there's quite a lot of stone, and are these things that are in progress of being used in jobs?
Oh no, I finished dressing stone.
You've actually finished?
Yes, there's been no stone dressed in here for 12 years.
12 years? Yes. Do you still do any monumental work at all?
That's what I have been doing mainly.
Is it? Recently? Yes. Yeah.
But not too much of it, less and less every year.
Really? Gradually winding down?
Oh yeah, so I can't do a full day's work, haven't been able to do for years.
No.
Absolutely tired out by the middle of the afternoon, and then it's got down to about the middle of the day if I turn down.
I noticed a set of rollers out the back there. What were they used for?
Oh, that's how we moved the stone around.
Was it the bigger pieces?
They rolled them on that, yes. This yard used to be an earth floor.
Yes.
And St. George's Street out here was over a foot higher in the middle. The camber was tremendous.
Really?
And just water and back, in heavy rain.
Yeah.
Water used to pour down the street and find its way down the yard here, and it wore a gully right down the yard. Well, this thing was a menace when you're rolling big stones over it.
Yeah.
And then when we started to get the big granite headstones and bases and things, it was positively dangerous.
Yeah.
So the cable car track had been taken up a year or so. And when Dad decided, we had a quiet spell here, we'd take the earth out and level the yard, put the sets on it. She put concrete borders down each side and the sets across where the heavy rolling would be. He said, the rollers won't wear those out. So we did that. And they were quite a remarkable improvement on the old way. And they are a bit rough and bouncy to go over, but they're much easier now. Mm. But previous to that, when the earth floor was there were nearly all these Yorkshire stone or red sandstone headstones and big ones, and two men would walk them up the yard. They wouldn't carry them or roll them. One get each side and they just from end to end and walk these stones up. It's surprising how big a thing they can move that way.
Yes. And then most of the work would be done outside in the yard?
Well, no, it was done in that shed down the bottom there, the banker shed, as you know. The mason always called his bench a banker, because he never had a bench like a joiner. It was always a couple of stools or boxes or things, and they put the stone on it. That's a mason stool across the way there on the platform.
Yes.
You get it on those, you could balance the stone. Lift one man, you lift an end, and the other fella can move the stone around.
Oh, I see.
And
what do you call it? A banker?
Yes.
I see. Banking shed?
The banker.
Banker shed? And what about the upstairs? What went on upstairs?
Well, in my time, it was a tile store.
Tiles.
But when my grandfather first came up here, they used to make a lot of marble chimney pieces.
Mm.
And they'd make those up when they were quiet.
Yes.
And then in the spring, or just after the turn of the year, the local masons would get a polisher over from Liverpool or Manchester. He'd come over and polish all this marble. A few days here and a few days somewhere else. And you see, there were Creers, Roystons and ourselves were all quite old firms.
Yes.
You go around the lot, I believe.
Oh.
And that's where they did the polishing upstairs.
Was it?
Well, of course, the demand for those fireplaces decreased, and so the men started polishing them themselves when in the quiet time then.
Yes.
Bringing men over ceased then.
Yes. And the forge, that was just simply used for sharpening the tools?
Oh yes, or for making cramps.
Yes.
The metal cramps that fix stones together.
Yes.
And part of their iron with the ends turned down, each end turned down.
Yes.
And that was let into the stones and it tied them together.
Uh-huh.
Well, they were put in the fire and
yes.
The ends hammered down square.
Yes. What about drilling? Did you do a lot of drilling of stone?
Not a lot. There was some, a certain amount done.
Mm.
But usually the things were big enough to cut them out with a hammer and chisel by hand.
Were they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
My brother once made a wheel cross on that old hand drill you see in the smithy.
Yeah.
Very old, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
A real piece of archaeology.
Yeah.
But he did it. I remember being home on leave during the war and he was drilling this thing out.
Yeah.
And it took a long time. But he was an apprentice and he had lots of patience.
Yeah, yeah. And he did it.
Yes. And then I once drilled two marble blocks which were bases for a small flower flower vases, one which went one each side of a headstone
that
we got over. And these things had no outlet for water. Because water would splash over and get in there. And of course, it was a danger when it, in frosty weather that it would burst the marble because they were cut away so thin.
Yes.
So I had to bore down these things. They were 15 inches deep. And I did it with that.
The hand drill?
Hand drill, yes. And I met one spot on in the centre, boring from each side.
Yeah.
And the other, I only just missed it. They ran into each other very quickly.
Yeah.
So that was it. I felt very proud of myself. And then Dad says, "Ah, but what about the base that goes underneath it? You got another 6 inches each end of that." Don't you feel like doing it yourself?
Yeah.
You're not likely to get cracked. So I did that too, and I was looking at this memorial down the Zaire churchyard a couple of years ago, and it was down there, and it's suffered no harm. The water's evidently getting away.
It's still there.
Yeah, still it's still there, and it's not split in any way.
Yeah.
The water's good.
Well, your work wasn't obviously not just simply confined to Douglas, then.
Oh no, we went all over the island.
Did you? You go all over the island?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, it was my grandfather used to do that even.
Yeah.
I've heard Dad and the older men who were here at the time when I started trading saying they used to take the stones down to the railway station the night before and they would be delivered to the station nearest the churchyard where they had to be erected and the farmer would come along with his float or his cart or some stiff cart or any hand and cart it to the churchyard with them.
I see.
They'd go down the next morning to get the first train. Down.
Yes.
I think the first train went about 7:30 or something in those days.
Yeah.
And then make their own way home with whatever the trains, however the trains ran.
Yes. Yeah.
And another way, I believe they used to load up a low float. The night before he and the cart would set off about 5 o'clock in the morning they're going to the ones right out and the men would make their way down by train and the first train in the morning and
catch up
with them. Yeah.
There'd be a lot of horse and cart work in there.
Well, when I started trade we were still getting horse and carts here from Cretney Brothers and Hope Street.
Yes,
especially for the very heavy black granite headstones, it was really dense material that, and it was very heavy to handle, and of course it was polished up and the edges were complete, it were very, sharp, straight, you had to watch it didn't damage them.
Yeah.
So they had the what they called the low float, that was a vehicle, something like the brewer's drays were, with a cranked axle.
Yes,
and backed them in here. And each gate was then kept back by a big stone at the base. And the purpose of that stone was to put under the back of the cart so that when you loaded the headstone on it, the horse didn't come back over the cart.
Didn't lift the horse off the ground. Until you got it up and balanced.
And once it got once it was loaded, of course, we could take them out.
Yes.
But it used to be an awful job going up into Bratton Cemetery for those days. There was only the one entrance. And these things, there wasn't a lot of room to spare.
No.
Going between the gates, the big stone gate posts and the cast iron gates that are on the old part of the cemetery. And because it's a steep hill up to the mortuary chapel. And anyway, and we had a chain horse when we went up there too, going ahead of the old horse. And it'd get the two horses on it then, and then it'd gear them up and away they'd go. And they always got through those gates, how I don't know. If that, you know, the big hubs that used to be on the wheels and those things, I used to think, oh God, it was those catches the gates. Well, I can imagine the horse panicking or something.
Well, when you imported the stone from across, like the sandstone and things, did you do that through agents or did you buy direct from the quarries?
From the quarries.
Did you?
Mostly, yes. But, oh no, the imported, I'm sorry. No, that, the stuff from abroad, we used to buy that from agents for those quarries in Britain.
I see.
And, of course, shipping brokers and agents used to arrange the transport.
Transport, yes. So it would be simply like general cargo sort
of
freightage,
But the others, the stone, the quarries in Britain, we bought directly from.
Did you?
St. Pees and Aberdeen, Cornwall, Yorkshire, the slate in Cumberland and Westmorland and North Wales.
Mm. Well, when you were ordering stone, did you? How did you order it? Was it in so many pieces, so many lengths, or
yes, well, it
or by weight?
Yes, it building stones. Of course, you had to take the sizes off the drawings and order stone large enough to make that.
Yeah,
and you had to be very careful on that, especially if you got stones with unsplayed corners. The returns, but this. Of return stones and allow the extra size and the extra width and that.
Yes.
The monumental stuff, well, of course, that was set sizes. I mean, a grave area over here was 8 feet by 4, and all the burial grounds except one part of Maloo.
Uh-huh.
There were some of them were 10 feet by 4 then. They were against the wall, so they put the extra 2 feet in the grave instead of having rough ground behind.
I see.
It's in the old churchyards, like Old Kirk Braddon and the old parts of Lonnon and Onken, the graves were 3 feet wide, not 4.
I see. Didn't know that. Oh. They varied.
Oh, yes, but it was a standard size all the time I was at trade, and had been for many, many years before that.
Yes. And you'd order direct the standard sizes from
the quarry? Oh, no, we used to bring the stones from the local quarry, from the British quarries, except the Aberdeen and Grand's ones, but the freestones and the limestones, they used to come over and we dress them in.
Really?
But in my time, the red sandstone used to come sawn two sides. You just square the top and bottom off, put chamfers on them or panels in them, whichever you want.
Yes.
And the Yorkshire stone, we usually got it sawn four sides.
Yeah.
And then you could cut the panels in it and do what you wanted.
Yeah.
The headstones, well, they used to come in blocks that were big enough to make the headstone, of course, and they were sawn on two faces.
Yeah.
You dressed the edges, and if they had the sloping front on them, we had to dress that off too.
Yes. What about designs and things on the headstones? Did you follow any set pattern or did
Well, yes, I mean, you see an old second-hand one, you know, an old one in the smithy there, it's been taken down, it's a Gothic top on that, you know, the lancet top. And the others, then the various other patterns around them. Usually one firm stuck to its own designs on that, but of course they didn't hesitate to copy someone else's.
No.
So a customer came in and wanted no such things as copyright.
No. And did you have a sort of an illustrated catalogue or something that could show people?
Well, that came in more with the marble and granite.
Did
in stone. They did have them, of course, in stone, but they weren't very usual. Usually they had photographs taken of them and used from that.
Yes, yeah. And if anybody wanted a particular design, you'd just simply work it out yourself.
Well, Knox's stones are that.
Knox's,
yes. The tiger were typical of that. But anybody came in with a design he wanted doing himself, as long as it was a practical thing, it would be done.
We're done, yes.
As long as it didn't offend against things as well.
You sketched it out and did it on the stone.
Yes.
Yeah. This mosaic panel here, that's a Knox thing, is it?
Yes. Yeah, my father was very fond of mosaic. When he started trade, there was as much of it came as loose mosaic as came stuck on paper.
Uh-huh.
I mean, most of it, as you know nowadays, well, it's on paper or on net backing.
Yeah.
Put it down in sheets.
Yeah.
But they used to get the loose pieces and put them in. Anyway, he decided he'd like to make something in Roman mosaic style.
Yeah.
And talking to Knox at the house one night, and he said this, "All right, I'll make a design for you. I'll prepare a design. If it suits you, you can try your hand on that." So he did, and that's the result of it.
I see.
That's all made out of scrap tiles, the cuts of tiles, where they had to cut tiles to fit in around the walls.
Yes.
Out of the scrap stuff.
Is it really? Gosh.
It was supposed to have been exhibited in the Craftsman's Guild, you know, the forerunner of the music festival.
Yes,
It didn't get anywhere in those days. Knox wasn't so highly thought of by the average person.
What about this one here?
That's the nonary coat of arms. Goldie Taubman family coat of arms, yes. We got a job to cut that on the fireplace in the big hall up there.
Yes.
And anyway, Dad said, "Well, here, have a go." So I started it, and then he said, "Well, you're not bad. Could be better." So he started on it then, and he improved it a tremendous amount.
Yeah.
He was much better carver than ever I was, or ever would have been. And
this was actually hand carved?
Yes, But that was a trial for me to cut my teeth on.
Was it?
Yes. And anyway, he improved it.
Yeah.
Well, we got so busy, he just couldn't get round to doing this. Continually getting telephone calls from Mr. Kenner about coming up to do this and that and the other. And at the time, the Hall Caine Memorial was being made here.
Yeah.
And around the base of it, there are five characters from Hall Caine's novels, figure carving. And we got a carver over from, anyway, he came over, Tom Murphy, and he carved the Hall Caine things, and Dad said to him, "Well, look, Tom, before you go back, could you do a bit more carving for me? I've got some stuff I want doing." And I said, "That isn't, want that on the nunnery fireplace on there." "Oh, yes," he said, "I'll do that. Nothing urgent to go back for."
Yeah.
He said, "Do you mind if I just altered a bit? Touch it up." "Oh, no, you go on, you're going to carve the real thing itself, you make it a suit." And he did that, he deepened it in places and things like that.
Yeah.
It made a tremendous difference.
Yes.
Very little effort, what a different thing it was when he finished it.
Yes.
And he then went up and carved that, the one in the hall.
Mm-hmm.
And the next year he came back and carved another one over the main entrance. Red sandstone over the main gate there, yes.
You see.
But it hasn't got the mantling on it, that one. There wasn't enough room on the stone to get the shield big enough for Major Goldie Taubman's requirements and all the mantling. So, I mean, what started out as a trial effort by me ended up by being finished.
Yeah.
Well, carved, in fact,
yeah.
By the man who, very shortly after he left here, became the foreman stone carver on the Anglican Cathedral in Liverpool.
Oh, Really?
And he stayed there, with the exception of the war years, until the building was finished, and then carried on for a few years renovating the carving that had been done on the very first part of that
Good.
Dress stone.
Yeah.
A fourth bridge type of
yes,
situation.
Yes,
and
yeah.
he, when did he, I went into the cathedral the last year the steam packet was the steam packet as
yeah.
I knew it. I went away one night and came back the following night, you know, the long, full long day.
Yeah.
And I went up to the cathedral in the morning and looking round, and I asked someone up there, was Tom still there? And, well, no, he said he retired at long last, and I don't know what's happened to him since. I've never seen or heard of him since.
No.
We did meet the year before, or a couple of years before. It was the first time we'd seen each other for about 40 years. Cause after he left here,
yeah.
we kept in regular touch and did until halfway through the war.
Yes.
And then his letters stopped coming, and of course thought, oh, well, that's it's a case of goodbye. And
yeah.
apparently
yeah.
the same thing happened. My letters didn't get to him, and he thought I must have gone. I then found he was back on the cathedral, but I could never meet him whenever I was in Liverpool.
No.
I was always too early in the morning or
too late
in the evening.
There'd be quite a lot of this ornamental carving going on over here with the early
days. Not an awful lot. You got a lot of it on the old Yorkshire and red sandstone headstones.
Did
of
you?
Course.
Yes,
you get that.
Yeah.
Roses and lilies and things like that.
Yeah.
Well, my grandfather's brother was a very good carver, and some of the stones up in the old part of Bradon Cemetery that he carved, roses especially on it, they're beautifully done.
Are they? Yes.
He carved the coat of arms over the entrance to the registry office in Finch Road, there, you know, the Royal Coat of Arms. There.
Did he?
Yeah.
That was your grandfather's brother?
Yes.
Was he?
Oh. Yes, he was a very good carver.
Yeah.
He also, I don't know whether you've ever seen the Lace Memorial up in old Kirkmaround.
No, I don't think
so. It's quite a huge lump of marble. Looks more like Yorkshire stone now, it's so covered with lichen.
Yeah.
But it's a design by Knox.
Yes.
And he did that. It's quite a remarkable thing now.
Oh, I must have a look
it's
at
not
that.
An elaborate, you know, Cupids and all this kind of thing. It's Knox's design.
Yes.
But it's beautifully done.
And that's the Lace Memorial?
Yes.
Mm.
They're a Foxtail family, and one brother went away to work and he thrived in Wigan.
Mm.
Another brother became a teacher, Richard Lace. He was headmaster of one of these schools around Douglas at one time. Geoega, something like that.
Oh.
He was the organist at Kirkbraddon at one time. anyway, Thomas Lace had that one put up on his parents' grave up in, on his mother's grave anyway, up in old Kirkmaround.
Yes. Oh, I must go and have a look at that.
Oh yes, it's, it's on the, be the south side of the church. Just big, you know, a few graves away from the south side of the church.
Yeah, yeah.
And then this, they, after John Miller Nicholson died, there was a move to erect a memorial to him.
Mm-hmm.
And Knox designed something for them, and it was, specimens of it were, oh, a part of it were worked here and for the committee to see.
Yes.
Well, then the First World War broke out and the whole issue was dropped, of course, and never revived. But these had always been there. But I haven't got the original design.
No.
That's disappeared.
And that was designed by Knox for as a tribute to J.M.
Nicholson. Yes.
Really?
That one is gilded. The one above it is not gilded.
No.
And I've got a postcard written to Dad by Knox when he was a censor at Knox Ailill.
Yes.
that he would be in on a certain day, and could they have the specimen stone gilded? The committee would ask for that and ask to see it gilded.
And that's what kind of sort of stone is
that? Oh, that's Bath stone.
Bath stone.
Yes, I don't know what it was intended to make the actual memorial in. But yes, that's again as Bath stone. It was a favourite stone for making trial carvings in, and we always seem to have bits of it about, and quite a few yet even.
And would this be slightly softer than
would it?
Yes.
Easier to carve.
Yes. Yes, I often wondered when I've seen it round about in the various places. It's a fine grit, isn't it?
Oh, yes. It's a form of limestone, really.
Yeah.
It's a Portland stone, rhyolite, as they call it. It's made of the grains are egg like little eggs. And the Caen stone is the same stone in France.
Yes.
Only it's a finer grain again.
Is it?
Yes, that was used on fonts and wall tablets in churches and things like that.
And that was from Caen in France.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I had no idea that they used such a variety of stone from different places.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you go down the yard there, there's granites from South Africa and India and Sweden, Aberdeen, of course, Cornwall. Well, you get limestone from Ireland, well, granite from Ireland as well, and then there's Portland stone, odd bits of it about from over from the what was Martin's Bank.
Yes.
The the Portland stone front there, that was made in here in the yard.
Was it?
Yeah. It was a very busy time. Stonework in the first few, it was somewhere around about 1924, the same time as the war memorial was going on.
Yes.
And Dad had four Irish masons over for that. I still remember them down there. I was a little boy going down here.
Yes.
And they were tip toppers, there was no doubt about it. They were down good ones.
These were the skilled masons.
Yes, oh yes.
Did that mean carving as well as?
Well, no, they were doing the ordinary dressing, the banker dressing.
The dressing,
yes. The half columns that are down there, and the moulded entablature around the windows there,
really
moulded work there.
Yeah.
But they were tip toppers, all right. They were men, of course, who'd always worked on good class buildings.
Yes.
And of course, things weren't so good in Ireland soon after the fall, the foundation of the Republic.
That's
things
right,
like that.
Yes, the troubles.
They were. Dad wrote to Harrisons of Dublin, people he'd had a lot of dealings with in the time, and his father before him. They were big monumental and building masons.
Yeah.
And they recommended these four, and my gosh, they were four good ones.
Were they? Yes.
And then with Italians working here during the last war.
Did you?
Yes. They were internees, of course.
Yes, yeah.
Both down here, dressing stone and carving stone.
Yeah.
And there were tiles, well, there was tiling up in Balakamine School for us.
Really?
Dad only had two of his pre-war staff here, you see, once the war got going.
Yes, yes.
And he got these fellas in. And every one of them was a good one.
Yes.
Good. My youngest brother was serving his time here then, and he used to speak very highly of them.
And you did obviously a lot of tile work as well as them.
Oh yes, that was a later. My grandfather started very early on, as a matter of fact. He saw what a wonderful thing it would be for inside work.
Yes.
In winter time and spring time.
This was mainly in bathrooms and halls.
Well, of course, originally it was floors.
I see. Tile floors.
You could get glazed tiles, but they didn't come into favour, or full favour, for some time after. The floor tiling was used a lot in vestibules and the halls. You might have noticed the houses on the promenade, they nearly all got tiled
halls. Yes, I never connected that before, until you mentioned it. Yeah.
Yes, and then the a lot of the churches had tiled floors in the aisles as well.
Yes,
yeah. Very elaborate patterns.
Yes, one tends to think of tiles now as either bathrooms or something like that.
Yes,
not,
so
not
that,
floor tiles.
Of course, that came in and after the First World War
yes.
as a popular thing.
Yes,
and of course, they're very elaborate, really early ones. And of course, the butcher's shops were very often tiled inside.
Of course,
you know,
yes.
And the Maypole, of course.
Yes,
And
where would you get your tiles from?
Well, the potteries, of course, mainly, but also from Manchester, from Clifton Junction, Pilkingdon's, and Pratt's and Woolliscroft's there, and then from Hereford.
Yes.
The Thins and Devon. There was some came round there, the Devon Newton Abbott area.
Really?
The Devon fireplaces came work in Devon. And then you every so often get the odd little place somewhere very special. Oh, well, Wales. Used to get a lot of quarry tiles from there.
Mm.
North
Wales. What's the difference between the quarry tiles?
Well, they were a heavier duty tile than the ordinary, the tiles supplied by the normal manufacturers,
right.
The adamantines, and they nearly all had a trade name on their particular floor tiles.
Mm.
But they seemed to be a finer clay, and it could be more elaborate, because at one time, we didn't have many of them in my time, but used to get a lot of tiles, floor tiles, with inlaid patterns in them, a different colour. It'd be a red tile with a buff pattern, key pattern, Greek key pattern, or some floral pattern in them.
Yeah.
And then caustics, as they call them.
Mm.
They were the most elaborate floors. Yeah, you see quite a few of them in churches round about. I used to see some of them in those halls in the on the promenade too.
Yes.
The ones that haven't been covered over.
Like a lot of things, I'm afraid they get just covered and forgotten. Let's just see what we've got here then, Mr.